Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, let me ask you, should Christians vote for the lesser of two evils? You know, every election season, it seems like we get towards the end of the where the nominee is going to be picked. And then people are wondering, well, if it came down to this and somebody that I completely disagree with in the other party, this type of thing, I'm faced with this dilemma about should we vote for the lesser of two evils is the way that it is often put. Well, that was the title of an article that was just printed in Christianity Today, or posted there, I should say, on March 2nd. It's written by Russell Moore, and he says this: "For years, I have urged Christians to take seriously their obligations as citizens, starting with exercising the right to vote in the public square and at the ballot box. We must be more engaged, not less. But what happens in a race where Christians are faced with two morally problematic choices? Should voters cast a ballot for the lesser of two evils? This unpredictable election cycle could go in a number of directions, and I keep getting asked that question." Now, Russell Moore then goes on in the rest of the article to point out what he believes and how he believes we should think through that that dilemma. But I wanted to pose that same question today to the professor of history and political studies at the Masters College, and that is Dr. Greg Frazier, who's been our guest here on the broadcast before. Dr. Frazier, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Thank you, Kevin.
Well, there's our question for today. I wanted to see if we could talk through this a little bit. A lot of Christians do ask that question, and they feel, man, and some of them really find this to be disturbing, that they're forced to vote for the lesser of two evils. What's your take on that subject, and maybe you could start us off in our discussion?
Well, I think there's a number of ways to look at it, and a lot of it just depends on how you define terms. On the one hand, the lesser of two evils is still evil. Mm. On the other hand, we're all evil, as Russell Moore points out in his article. Unless Jesus is on the ballot, everybody else is evil at some level. So it kind of comes down to what we mean by the lesser of two evils and what's involved. And basically, the first thing we need to recognize is that whenever you're voting for fallen human beings. Mm-hmm. And so at some point, at some level, they are evil, they're flawed, they're sinful. So the question, I think, comes down more to what they espouse and whether what they espouse is evil and to what extent, and whether or not you can live with that or not. And so I think that's what it really comes down to, is what the candidates espouse, what they support, what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. So that first point being that it's a kind of a false premise right in the very beginning. There is no perfect individual that we're voting for anyways, that we can vote into office. And therefore, it's always going to be a vote for the lesser of two evils, no matter who we vote for. And yet, when we look at that evil that we're talking about there, we have to kind of qualify what level of evil are we talking about. Like for me, if the person is says that they're pro-choice or anti-life, however we want to say that, that's an immediate disqualification for me. I wouldn't vote for a person that is okay with taking the life of an unborn child. So that's an immediate disqualification. So that would be one level of evil. But then there'd be all these other less dramatic, maybe, or less obvious evil that would take place. Is that basically what you're describing?
Yeah, and I'm fully in agreement with you. I have a fundamental rule myself that I will not vote for any significant office, or dog catcher maybe, but not for any significant office for anyone who is pro-abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Just as I have some friends who have argued on the lesser of two evils grounds that they have supported some pro-abortion candidates in the past, and I've always asked them, well, what if the candidate came out tomorrow and said that I think parents ought to be able to murder their children up to age 10, and I'm going to promote that as my policy. Would you support them then? And they say, well, no, of course not. And what this points out is that most believers really don't believe that abortion is murder. They use that terminology, but many,
yes,
not all, obviously, but many Christians really don't see abortion as murder. They see it as something different, because they say, well, of course not. If you wouldn't murder a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old or something, well, what's the difference? You're supporting a candidate who wants to murder children in the womb. So to me, that's a no-brainer. I will not vote for anyone who is pro-abortion. On the other hand, I don't think the reverse is true, however, that I would automatically vote for someone because they're pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, the issue of abortion is not a mere political issue. I mean, that's an issue of pure evil. And so that's beyond the political. You don't just put that in a balance of scales and say, well, I like their foreign policy and their trade policy, but, oh, yeah, they want to murder people.
Mm-hmm.
It's beyond, you know, mere politics, but that's a negative qualification. But I won't automatically vote for someone just because they're pro-life. Now, assuming that I have this group of people who are all pro-life, now I want to look at other issues. So,
mm-hmm. So when we're trying to qualify that evil word there, so obviously on this issue of abortion, it can be crystal clear, depending on what the candidate says, but oftentimes it can also be a little bit fuzzy. For instance, the leader of the GOP primary races so far, of course, is Donald Trump, who Trump has made statements that he is pro-life and so forth, although he held the opposite position before, and now has made statements about positive statements about Planned Parenthood. So the waters get muddied very quickly if the term then I am pro-life, or the phrase I am pro-life, becomes just a box that needs to be checked in order to win certain voting block. And whether it is honest or if he's being straightforward on what we mean by being pro-life. So we got to consider that as well, right?
Right. And at this juncture, in looking at the Trump candidacy, at this juncture, I'm inclined to say that at least there's a chance that he will act in a pro-life fashion. In other words, he will appoint pro-life justices or judges to the court. He will act in a pro-life sense in terms of policies within the bureaucracy and the various departments and agencies that are under the president's purview. He's at least saying that he is now pro-life, and I recognize that people can change their view,
mm-hmm,
on issues. And so at this point, you know, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt and say, all right, there's at least a chance that he will be pro-life, and there's no chance on the other side. And so, you know, then I would lean in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
I'm skeptical. But you can't know what's in a guy's heart or what's in a guy's mind. You have to go pretty much by what they say. And as I said, I think people can change their minds, change their views.
Yes.
And so I'm hopeful.
Yes.
I guess is the way I put it. And I. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, not only do we can they change, but obviously we want people to change. This is what we're working for, is
right,
to convince them of the validity of the argument on the other side and the righteousness of the argument and cause them to change over. He muddies the water himself when he then makes positive statements about Planned Parenthood, and then very quickly we just it makes people wonder whether he's just being disingenuous in what he exactly is going to do. He kind of joked about, apparently it was a joke about nominating his sister to the Supreme Court, and then she was pretty rabidly pro-choice. And so when he makes those types of statements, he opens up the door for people to wonder just how pro-life he is or isn't. Let me ask you now, as Russell Moore goes through his article there, then he says that basically he can't vote for, he's referring, I think, to Donald Trump, but he can't vote for Trump. And the basic article is, or his basic point in the article is, that because Trump is so evil, he has crossed a point of just being just the general acknowledgement of that we're all sinners, to the point of because of having been owning strip clubs and involved in gambling, having made a lot of his money off of casinos and so forth, and on and on and on with all these, another article refers to him as the king of sleaze, all these sleazy activities, that he is so evil that the Christians shouldn't be casting a vote for him. What would you say?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Actually, yesterday I encountered the first person I've met who's a Trump supporter. And had about a half hour.
A believer?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, it was actually kind of shocking. But had about a half hour noisy discussion with him, and what it basically did was just confirm for me what I've thought all along, which is, at the risk of offending people, that Trump supporters are emoting; they're not thinking, and that rational arguments are sort of meaningless or pointless. You can't be reasoned away from a position you weren't reasoned into. I think there's the issue that you raised there is a thorny one. On the one hand, you would say, okay, here's a guy who created strip clubs and has done a lot of divorced twice and cheated on his wife when he was married, and so on and so forth, and uses foul language, and makes a lot of gutter comments and so forth. Can you vote for or support that person? On the other hand, as Martin Luther emphasized, when you're choosing someone to be a ruler or someone in political office, he would argue that the most important thing is that they know what they're doing. Just as when someone, if you're going to hire someone to do your plumbing, you don't check into their personal characteristics or their lifestyle or whatever. You just want someone who knows how to fix plumbing. And that's Martin Luther's argument, and I think there's a lot to that. Trump, I think, is really pressing this issue and making it bringing this issue to the fore, making it a difficult question. There's no doubt that he is a sleazy kind of person, etc. The question is, if I don't think he is anyway, but if he knows the most and is best qualified to be in the political office and to accomplish things in the office, then do you overlook those character issues in order to put the best person in? And therein lies the rub. How far can you go in? The same guy that I was talking to yesterday, who's a Trump supporter, said that he was absolutely opposed to Mitt Romney in 2012 because he was Mormon. Now there's a guy then who is crystal clean in terms of morality, but he wouldn't vote for him because he was a Mormon. But you're not voting for a pastor, you're voting for a president. And in this sense, there's a sense in which you're not voting for a moral leader, you're voting for a president, unless you think the president is a moral leader of necessity. And these are all interesting questions. I'm not completely landed firmly in that area.
Yeah, my thought on Luther's comment, like if you were hiring a plumber, you know, you just want him to do the job. The problem, I think, with that illustration is that, you know, it's so utilitarian. It's just, okay, I got a broken pipe. Can you fix the broken pipe? But this position is leadership by its very nature. And so can you lead? In this case, lead a nation, even lead the world is the position that we find ourselves in as a nation. Does he have that capability? And, you know, the qualifications there, I think, are much higher as a leader than just the utilitarian, can you fix the economy? Unfortunately, I think many people are just looking at Trump this way and not building in the idea that we need a leader as well as somebody who can just fix these more utilitarian problems that we're dealing with. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think you're right. I just think it becomes a murkier issue or a messier issue depending on which direction you lean in that sense. It disturbs me greatly. It basically turns my stomach to think of Donald Trump as the president of the United States. You know, and this is a sort of a classic example of the lesser of two evils question. Because policy-wise and strictly politically-wise, I think that he would be the lesser of two evils. But he would still be certainly evil.
Yeah.
And so it's not the lesser of two evils. You know, he's evil because he's a fallen human being, and the other is evil. It's sort of there's one is evil, and another one is evil.
Yeah.
And
go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's a conundrum.
Yes. Yeah. We see this happening before our very eyes. And to me, I don't understand. We can get the similar things, maybe the same things, maybe even better things from some of the other candidates in the primary. For instance, that supporting Ted Cruz. And so I'm still going to get a strong stance on immigration. Cruz talked about eliminating certain departments of government, so smaller government, and, you know, he actually get things done, this type of thing. So I'm still going to get those things, but I can get those things without Donald Trump himself. So right now I've got an alternative. So I don't know why people don't go towards that alternative when there is one, and there are so many, especially moral problems with Donald Trump. My view on why so many Christians are doing this, or those that say that they're evangelicals, I think that they feel that his moral corruption, his personal moral corruption, they're willing to overlook it because they feel that his policies that he is talking about, primarily the policy on immigration, and immigration in my mind being the issue of this campaign, that his stance on immigration is so strong that they feel that his policy there is going to make the country better, even though his moral, personal moral standing is so corrupt. So therefore, whether this is subliminal or what, but they're willing to overlook his personal corruption because they think nationally it's going to result in a better nation because of his stance on immigration. What do you think?
Yeah, and this is, again, in my view, this is completely emotive.
Yes.
It's not rational. When I was arguing with this guy yesterday, you know, his whole case basically is that we need something extreme. He's one of these angry Americans who thinks that we need to do something extreme and bombastic and over the top. We need somebody who will be strong in that regard. And I kept pointing out to him as he brought up things, I said, okay, but the president can't do that. Okay, but you can't do that. Okay, but this can't happen. The president doesn't have the power to do this. This is against Geneva Convention, blah, 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 blah. And I said, so you'd rather have a guy who gets up and just yells about stuff he's going to do that he can't actually do than a guy who's quieter and can actually accomplish the thing? And he said, yeah. So, you know, this is just, it's just totally irrationality. It's flummoxing. I don't know how to deal with it because it's just irrational. Trump is obviously, as everybody has said, has tapped into this well of anger.
Yes.
In Americans. And I think that's dangerous too for the country, for people to be making decisions on the basis of anger.
Right.
And what the founders, you know, the whole plan of the founders was to separate the passions of the people from their reason, and because they were worried about the passions of the people. I mean, that's the fundamental theme of the Federalist Papers, is that you have to get the reason of the people to rule over their passions. I think we've gone very much in an opposite direction at this point. And we're also, by the way, I would argue, with Trump sowing the seeds of 30 years or so of the various media telling us that the president runs the country, which, as I've said on this program before, the president doesn't run the country. The president is part of the governmental system. But, you know, Donald Trump, as I tell people all the time, you know, he can't just fire the Congress.
He probably
like on his
will.
TV show, he can just fire people, but you have to act through a system, and the president can't just rule as a dictator, and he can't just say, we're going to do this, and it's going to happen. Just like in the last debate when he said that he would just tell his generals and soldiers to murder the families of terrorists, and the next day 150 generals wrote an open letter saying, we won't do that, we won't obey.
Right.
And it's against the law.
Yeah.
It's a frustrating and I think a dangerous time in America. These are the ways that you end up with, and I'm not saying that Donald Trump is a Hitler or a Mussolini, but this is how you end up with a Hitler or a Mussolini, is when the people act out of passion and anger and fear.
Yeah, I think that a couple of things have conspired together at the same time. At the same time that he's tapped into that angst, and I don't, I think that there should be angst, and I'm glad that at least the American people, at least they got to the point that they care enough that they're angry about it, about what has happened in the country up until now. But he's tapped into that. But at the same time, the people also have a high distrust for the quote-unquote conservatives that have been put into office. So these people keep trying to reason with them and say, hey, he's not a conservative, but nobody's listening to him anymore because you told us last time that you were the conservative guy, and yet all this other stuff has taken place under your watch, and we don't care what you say anymore. So that happened at the same time as this. So the voices that normally would have been able to reason with people, they've just tuned them out and said, well, you guys didn't get anything done. In fact, the country kept its slide towards the demise of the country under your leadership, so we don't care what you're saying. So then, for them now traping out somebody like Romney, you know, in order to try to stop Trump is just telling about how badly they have misjudged it. I got to ask you one final thing here. In the end of Russell Moore's article, he says that he's then not going to vote if Donald Trump, he's not going to vote for the GOP candidate. He can't vote for the Democrat candidate. And so he's just, you know, just don't vote. But is that not voting basically a vote for that other candidate? Is that basically going to put Hillary into office?
Well, that, of course, is the fundamental question in this issue that I talk about with my students all the time. And the answer is yes. Essentially, if you don't vote, the answer is partially yes. It's not actually a vote for the other person, but it certainly
the result
works to their advantage over what would happen if you voted for Trump, say. And the question is, and as I always tell the students, is look, if the candidates are Satan, Hitler, and Stalin, I'm not voting.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to decide, is it that serious when you're talking about the lesser of two evils?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a Satan, Hitler, Stalin situation? And if so, then I think you can't vote mm-hmm. as a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not that serious, then you hold your nose and you vote for the false.
Mm. I guess you could always write somebody in, but it's basically the same thing if that person has, you know, absolutely no chance of winning. But at least you could say, I did not cast my vote for that evil person. I wanted to ask you about this whole Never Trump thing, whether that is right. You know, if the people have voted, you don't agree with what they voted on, but the people have spoken. Is it right for us not to do that? But we'll have to save that for next time, unfortunately. Dr. Frazier, thank you so much for coming on the program today and helping us think through these issues.
Okay, thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome. That was Dr. Greg Frazier. He is the professor of history and political studies at the Master's College. You can find out more about Dr. Frazier. You can find out more about the Master's College by going out to their website at www.masters.edu. That's www.masters.edu. You can find out more out there. Remember this, the Lord Jesus Christ said, He said you shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. We'll see you here next time, right here on the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.